it came towards me, and they were charging, so I just dropped them myself, and they just got better. And then
I was 2 weeks old when that was on that date.
Well, hi, everybody, and welcome. This is Dave Krueger. Welcome to the seminar series that we'll be looking at how to write your first book. The four parts, the four seminars will be the art, the craft, the science, and the business of telling and selling your story. If you received my email, these are the two questions. You probably haven't had a chance to respond, but if anybody has an off-the-cuff answer, I'd appreciate it because what you're interested in will shape some of what I say. So here are the two questions. What's the most important question you want answered during this seminar series about authoring your first book? And two, if you were to walk away at the end of the next 4 weeks saying this is one of the best seminars you've ever attended, what would you walk away with? Would anyone like to take on either of those questions and, or just say hi? Sure. Options here already.
I would if I can.
This is
Rick. Rick, I'm calling from New York City. Thank
Terrific.
You.
All right.
Actually, the first question that you asked.
Can you get a little bit closer to your microphone, Rick, or off speaker?
Sure. Sure. Can you hear me? Is there okay?
That's way better. Do that with clients if you work with the telephone, by the way.
Sure.
Go ahead, please. Thank you.
So, but the first question that you asked, you know, what would I like to get out, you know, or as a class or wanting to learn is really the structure of putting together the story or the book. You know, is there a specific structure from beginning to end? You know, once you have your story in your head, then how do you lay it out?
Okay.
For me.
We will cover that. The entire second seminar will be the craft of writing. We're going to talk about the art first. So as many of you have followed me in other training or discussions, you know that my basic foundation is to bring the mind and brain sciences applied to strategic coaching. So we're going to do that too and not leave writing a book out of that. So there'll be some aspects of that. And the third seminar will be the science really and the neuroscience of writing. In fact, I'm going to ask you a question. Can I get a management of the background noise? When you're any kind of movement or paper movement is picked up, probably the best would be with a larger group to put yourself on mute until you're ready to talk, and don't forget to do unmute when you're ready again. So thanks, Rick. Any other responses to either of these two questions, the most important question and what you'd like to walk away with?
I guess the most important question I have.
Sorry,
hi, Dave. This
is
Susan.
Susan, welcome. Go ahead.
And my most important question is the one you asked about, how do you know if you've got something that other people want to read?
Okay. That's a great question. That's a very honest question. Okay. All right. I'm going to address that by saying first that what's the primary reason you write? The primary reason, in my view, that someone writes is not because they have something to say, but because they want to see what they have to say. And if that's the case, then you're learning, it's fun, other people are going to benefit, and then you can ultimately shape it to resonate with other people. So to say that in a simple way, whenever I write anything, whether that's a white paper, a book, a blog, my style is to talk it. So I'm talking into a digital recorder, so I'm envisioning an audience. And I may envision one person, a group I'm training, but I'm talking to them. It keeps me from being, you know, caught up in, you know, ways I can get caught up if I'm writing on a legal pad. But we'll return to that, and it's a good question, and it's an important question, because I begin by talking about, you know, first decide if you have a message, a blog series, an article, or a book. You know, and that's an important question you can ask and sort that out from the beginning, and I'll talk about some ways to go about that. So,
thank you.
So stay tuned. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Susan. Who else? Management of background noise. Any paper movement is picked up. So please do mute other than when you're talking, and there's still some background noise if someone hasn't walked away. I can always put us on lecture mode, which I will in just a moment. But let me get whatever other questions there are, and then we'll go to lecture mode.
Hi, this is Carolyn. I have the same question as she just said, and then I'll go to mute to get rid of the background noise.
Okay, and say your question specifically.
Specifically, do I have something that some other person that read it would help them, you know, help them in some sort of way in their life where they really felt that they were happy or really glad that they read my writing, that it really benefited them?
Carolyn, I bet you already have.
Carolyn, it's Carolyn. It's Carolyn.
I bet you already have a notion of that and have the answer. What's your answer to that?
I believe I do. I really do. It's just presenting it in a way that would, you know, presenting it in a format that a person could pick it up and be engaged.
Okay, that's where we pick up. You've got the belief. We'll take it from there.
Okay, awesome.
So stay tuned also. Any other responses?
I have one. This is Chantal, Dr. Kruger. My question is in regards to my book. I'm sorry, I'm breathing really hard because I'm in the gym. But my question is in regards to, I have a book, quasi-journal. It's not the standard journal. It's a journal that's formatted and from a perspective of a book, if that makes sense. And I just want to know if I'm in the right class, should I stay, if I'm in the right place.
Okay. I think that keep that question handy because as we talk, I think you'll
okay.
be able to answer that, and we'll talk
okay.
about parameters and principles and ways of looking at that to
okay.
be more objective as well as to stay subjectively aware of the immersion in writing.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Partly because of the background noise, I'm going to go to lecture mode. I'll reserve some time at the end for a discussion, so jot down any questions you have. Okay, we're in discussion mode now. As I mentioned, we're going to have four seminars, the art, the craft, the science, and the business of telling and selling your story. Right now, I'd like you to do two things. First thing, take a moment to write the title of the book you intend to write or the book that you're in the process of writing. Write down the title. You may not have it formally done, but just write it down. Okay, I want to mention a couple of things, and then I want to ask you four questions. You have a reminder of the page where each of the recordings will be posted for online playback. There's also an outline. There's also a workbook with exercises that you can download that corresponds to each of the four seminars that we'll be doing. So these are the four questions. I'd like you just to jot down your first answer, a word or a phrase, just jot down your answer. What initially draws you into a story that you want to read or hear? First impression, first phrase, first word. Two, what sustains your engagement as a listener or a reader? And three, this is a kind of speculation, but your first impression again. What do you unconsciously respond to when you hear or read a story that really grabs your attention? What is it about that story? And four, this is a move to your left brain. What determines bestsellers from non-sellers? Okay, this is the neuroscience secret of a successful story. This is not in your outline. I've added this very recently based on some very recent research. So this is the neuroscience secret of a successful story, whether it's a blog, a book, a wedding toast, whatever the story is. There's one answer. This is the lifeline clue, sort of. There's one answer to each of these four questions, all the questions, that comes from neuroscience that is based on how our brains are wired to perceive and process story. A story's secret is this. From the first sentence, we must want to know what happens next. If a story engages this curiosity, the brain's pleasure system fires with dopamine release, the pleasure chemical, a signal that intriguing information is unfolding. We pay attention. We keep going. This is what sustains the listener's or reader's efforts, or the client's. This is the neuroscience secret of everything from bestsellers to successful product and service launch. And all good stories give a promise in the beginning, a promise that is going to be worth your time. You invite the listener to the campfire circle of your story once upon a time. So let's talk now more about the art of writing. For the preparation, the backstory. It's been said that just about every smart, sensitive person has a desire to write a book because writing's a natural way for someone to learn, express, integrate, maybe even really feel alive. More than 80% of adults in America say they want to publish. How many do? Barely over 1%. And that includes articles, editorials, not just books. So, as I mentioned, first decide if you have a blog series, an article, a simple message, or if you have a book. A message is a written or spoken communication of an idea or point of view. An article can convey a message. A short series of blog posts can succinctly spread even a complex message. A nonfiction book, which is what we'll be talking about, builds a case. It develops and illustrates a theme. The book needs a story to hold its richness. It carries the reader along its course of reason and development, illustrating applications. The story is a conversation with the reader, with complexity and depth, but a conversation. The irony, as Seth Godin points out, the market demands that you summarize your book in a blog post. But that does make sense, and I'll explain a little bit more of that later. Traditional advice has been to write about what you know. Now, to me, this is another more exciting and creative possibility. As I mentioned, write to see what you have to say. Write about what you most want or need to learn. At a conference many years ago, when I was still practicing psychoanalysis, I was talking with a friend who was an excellent clinician, a great guy. We were discussing the paper just presented, and I asked when he was going to present a paper. He said, "I'm going to wait until I'm sure I have something to say." I knew at that moment he would never present a paper at that or any other conference. Unfortunately, I was right. Those of you who have trained or mentored with me know that not knowing anything has never stopped me from talking, but I'll stick to the point here. We're going to discuss how to write in a systematic, structured way for effective and successful results. We'll talk about what happens next when you schedule an appointment with yourself to write. We'll discuss the art, craft, science, and business of authoring your book. In short, how to tell and sell your story. First, commitment. A prerequisite is a commitment and a game plan. First, make sure your commitment and your game plan match. You know the words of somebody who's not really totally committed. I'll try, I should, I ought to, I want to, I know I need to. These are the words of someone committed. I will. One of the great philosophers of the 20th century said, try not, do or do not, there is no try. That was Yoda in The Empire Strikes Back. And think about the difference between a 99% commitment and a 100% commitment. Here's the Texas version of that. A fish has no use for a lake that has water 99% of the time. USA Today did a study on individuals who made New Year's resolutions. They found two groups, those who made a New Year's resolution and wrote it down, and those who made one but neglected to write it down. Of those who did not put their goal in writing, 4% kept the resolution. Of those who wrote down their resolution, 44% kept it. What that does from a neuroscience perspective is to move it to an output channel of the brain, and it makes it more real, and it makes follow-through more likely. For example, just recently, a study was done in three very large physicians' offices, and the receptionist gave half of the patients the card with the appointment date and time. The other half, she asked the patient to write the appointment time and write the date themselves. The ones who wrote it themselves, 18% more followed through with the visit. A study just out of England, when somebody reads a book out loud, instead of reading it silently, they retain it better and remember it better. Put it in an output channel. That's what you got to do with writing. You know, having a great idea is okay, but we're talking about writing a book here. So program your brain, for example, to complete the book by a chosen date. How much do you really want to tell and sell your story? One unknown author had a condition. Well, actually, let me put it differently. He had a collection of heartwarming stories that he thought would make a good book. He shopped his idea to every publisher he could find, no success. He shopped it ultimately to 141 publishers and was rejected by 141 publishers. He believed in the book, but he repeatedly was told that it wouldn't appeal to audiences. So he decided to publish it himself, began selling it out of the back of his car. He was committed. It had a really unlikely title, Chicken Soup for the Soul. And I personally heard Jack Canfield tell this story and have read it since. And at last count, he sold over 1.5 billion of books. So when you write down a commitment, it produces a tenfold resistance of follow-through. So first, write down your commitment to complete your book. Neuroscience teaches that the brain works like a travel agent. The first two questions a travel agent asks, where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? So let's talk about your vision now. How do you write a book? Consider a related question. How do you find a yellow Jeep? Here's an exercise. Some of you have done this with me before. I'd like you to close your eyes, get very comfortable and relaxed in your chair. Take a deep breath in for relaxation and breathe out any tension. And picture a yellow Jeep. Walk toward that yellow Jeep and notice everything about it. The tires, the bumper, the trim. Walk around the back of it. Circle around the front. Notice the grill. Come back to the driver's side. As you grab the handle, feel how cool and firm that metal feels in your hand. As you look at the seat and the windshield, look at the dash. As you sit in the seat, notice how firmly it holds you. Notice the smell of the interior. As you grip the wheel, look through the windshield as if you're driving. As you turn it on, listen to the motor. Feel the vibration of the motor running. imagine, as you look through the windshield again, that you're driving. Now, as you turn it off and get out of the Jeep, notice how firmly it sounds when the door closes. As you walk away and look back, take in the entire picture again of that yellow Jeep. Now, see what happens in the next week. A group of executives had asked me to present a seminar to them on writing a first book. We did a 3-hour morning seminar. The very first thing I asked them when I got to the front of the room and began the workshop with them was, how many of you in the last month has seen a yellow Jeep? And there were 24 present. And they looked around like, who is this guy? One person raised his hand. We did the exercise. And then I asked them if they would contact me either by email or telephone in the next week if they happened to see a yellow Jeep. In the first 3 days, 22 of the 24 people contacted me of having seen a yellow Jeep. Now, what happened? What somebody sees, what appears on the radar screen, is predetermined by belief and assumption. A yellow Jeep was pre-programmed as possibility. The most common reason people don't write a book is they don't believe they really can. Or if they do, they don't devise a specific plan and stick to it. It's the same reason people don't earn significant money and accumulate wealth. They don't see themselves as capable of it. I can tell you how much money people will make by listening to their assumptions. Once you genuinely see yourself completing your book, all sorts of things begin to happen. You've already coded your radar for writing your book, including taking this seminar series, listening right now. So we'll discuss how to evolve that vision. Here's an exercise I'd like you to do with me. This exercise is based on the principle that it takes just as much energy to construct a negative belief as it does to construct a positive belief. Now, do this exercise with me. It's going to feel a little bit goofy, but do it anyhow. I'd like you to say out loud two things you can't do. Like, I can't finish this article. I can't get the clutter out of my office. I'm going to pause for you to say out loud two things you can't do. Now, restate each, but substitute won't for can't. I won't finish this article I'm writing. I won't get the clutter out of my office. Say those two out loud now, beginning with I won't. Okay, now last step. I'd like you to say this sentence out loud three times. I am always free to change my mind. Out loud three times. I have been known to ask a client to repeat out loud something three times that they're going to do or something that they need to say. I've even been known in my previous life to ask a psychoanalytic patient to say it. Okay, so now you're aware of choice, and all you ever have to do is the next right thing. Once you begin thinking about your specific book, you begin to hear things in different ways. You begin to hear examples. You begin to hear and think about stories. Incidents become vignettes. Ideas begin to crystallize. You've coded your radar, in other words. You think about what you want to say and become aware of how you want to say it. You won't go places without a little moleskin or a little piece of paper somewhere. I'd recommend it be a moleskin rather than a sticky tab so that you can keep up with it better, to write down something that you think you're always going to remember but never do. Any place I go, whenever, you know, I sit down somewhere, at my home, at my ranch, driving back and forth, I have a dictaphone any place, a little digital dictation device any place that I want to set. I set, you know, everything I do, I talk it, I dictate it, and I plug it in for upload for transcription. So, a caveat, you become a better listener, and it makes you a better speaker and a better writer. So, there's a caveat here. No one ever sits down to write a book. Nobody's ever done it. In the history of the world, nobody's ever sat down and wrote a book. You sit down, you write a few sentences, maybe a page. Mozart never sat down to write an opera. He had a medley in his head, and he let it speak to him over time until the story of the music developed. So, perseverance. The most important thing about a goal is having one. The most important thing about a plan is to stick with it. Wisdom is to know the right path, and integrity is to take it. A clearly defined goal, think about, this is exactly what we do in coaching. A clearly defined goal can capture imagination and inspire passion. It can cut through the fog like a beacon in the night. One extra degree of effort in business and in life separates the good from the great. 51 publishers turned down Richard Bach's Jonathan Livingston Seagull. He took it to number 52. At 211 degrees, water's hot. One more degree and it boils. So, to get what you've never had, you'll probably have to do what you've never done. Lord Eliot put it very simply, perseverance is not a long race. It's many short races, one after another. So, here are some guiding questions to frame this discussion and the thinking about writing. Three goals to clarify before you start writing. What do you want to write? What do you want to gain? And who do you want to reach? Let's look more specifically. These are some reflections to begin your first book, before you begin your first chapter. Seven questions. These are all in the outline. Write for a specific preferred audience. Think about how you wanted to coach everybody about everything in the beginning and saw that the more refined, the more specific your niche, the faster you feel your practice. You may want everybody to read it. Remember now, and actually remember how in the beginning, coaching everybody about everything didn't really work, and it felt like an amputation to narrow it down until it paid off. Two, envision your audience. Create a persona for the two or three prototype people of those who you will write for. Your avatars. Speak directly to them. People who write novels generally create a persona for each of the main characters. They know if that person liked peanut butter when they were 3 years old. They know what grades they made. They may never use this in the novel, but they've developed it so when they're in that character, they speak from that character. And this is about you knowing the people you're going to speak to. Three, write a focused, compelling, understandable, and enjoyable conversation. Four, what's your aha? What is your good news? What is it you want to convey to people that from what you know and the feedback you get, they're interested in hearing? They might even pay you for it. Five, what will your book do uniquely well better than anybody else? That's why you're going to write it alone. Six, reach out for opinion, molders, and feedback like focus groups. Take a group of your buddies to lunch and ask them for feedback to give you ideas. Present something to them in a brief, succinct way and ask them for specifically focus the feedback you want. And seven, an initial step to create your book is to fully accept the reality of the process of writing and to evolve your identity as an author. That sounds a little elusive. I want to give you an example, because that's not as easy as you may think. This is a personal experience for me that was pivotal. When I was still practicing psychiatry psychoanalysis, I was writing the first non-professional book that I had written at that point. It was kind of my therapy, because I started writing it a year and a half before my son left for college, because I knew I was going to have a deparenting was the most important thing I'd ever done. I knew I was going to have a tough time saying goodbye, and I didn't want to burden him with most of it, at least. And then I completed it a little over a year after my daughter, 2 years younger, left. So this was what I did in my library at night. I would be immersed in the reverie of doing this. So basically, though, I first, in the book was Making Memories, Reflections on Parenting from the Heart of a Father and the Mind of a Psychoanalyst. I went to the Iowa Summer Writers Workshop because I knew what I knew was not for popular writing, because I'd written scientific stuff, you know, books and chapters and stuff like that. So I went to the Iowa Summer Writers Workshop and shared with my group my dilemma. And I was still practicing analysis at the time. I wanted to write from my heart, and I needed to use examples from my experiences as a parent, but I didn't want to burden my present and future psychoanalytic patients at the time with knowing so much about me personally. Psychoanalysts, you have to appreciate, think they have to remain totally anonymous to be a blank screen onto which the patient projects himself or herself. But I got some immensely helpful feedback from the group. This was to a person, and the instructor, when you're writing, you're not an analyst, you're not a father, you're an author. So write as your subtitle says, from your heart and your mind. 8, you're thinking and feeling a book into existence. Then you'll craft it into a powerful message with a memorable story. 9, what you imagine guides what you do. You learn what your book is about by thinking and writing. You have a structure, but you're living into it. And 10, you get your book done well by willing yourself to plan, organize, think, revise, and tolerate confusion and uncertainty. The principle is, do whatever it takes. Here's an exercise to address obstacles. My recommendation, this is in the outline, schedule a brainstorming session with yourself to do this exercise. It's important for you as an author to identify and address any obstacles that stand in your way of your project. Examples include interfering self-talk, what you may call writer's block, or being uncertain or anxious about the unknown, conversations about feeling like you may not know enough, or you may be inexperienced or concerned about not having anything to say and the like. So, make 4 vertical columns on a page. And I'll send you a page that has this already done as an attachment. Put in the first column emotional triggers. These would be the prompts or the triggers that set you into a cycle of negativity or stuckness, like, you know, well, I've never written a book before, so I don't know how to do it, or it's too much, or I don't know where to start, or just feeling anxious, because that can trigger movement into the second column, the usual behavior. The usual behavior is that, you know, you say, well, I'll do it next Tuesday and go to the mall, or you engage in this conversation with yourself about feeling like you don't know enough, or that somehow it really wouldn't work out. Whatever your habitual response to each of those emotional triggers. And that can include, well, I've never written a book before. Or I'm just going to continue doing research until I know I have something to say. Or bargaining with yourself. I'm going to start next Tuesday. Now, the third column, look at how you can get grounded and centered. Whatever you do to do that. I'm not going to go into the detail of that, but there's a 30 or 35-minute webinar on the homepage of Mentor Path my website that is about regulating states of mind. It's a way to think about getting grounded and centered, and it's a systematic way to do that. We're going to talk a little bit more in the third seminar about the science and neuroscience of writing, but this is just an exercise to really get grounded and centered. And then the fourth column is your ideal response. This is the specific behavior you want, that you plan for. It's an alternative to the usual behavior in column two. This is the ideal behavior. So when you have this planned out, you can begin to look at a usual trigger and move, after getting grounded and centered from that state change, to an ideal response. So let's rename the first two columns old story and the third and fourth columns new story. The idea is to quickly cue your radar to any kind of triggers or emotions that can immediately substitute getting locked into that cycle of self-talk or procrastination. So you get grounded and certain, you move immediately into the ideal response. This is reprogramming new behavior. It's a neural condition chart. When you do this enough, you will rewire your brain. Remember, neuroscience tells us what we focus on is what we get. Not what we want, but what we focus on. So be sure you focus on the right thing. Now, let's talk about the who, what, where, and when, and how of writing. Who? Who is it you write for? Your most authentic answer is yourself. When you speak in writing, you do so to your intended audience. Who's your audience? If you can identify specifically the audience you're going to address, the more specifically you can envision that audience, that reader or set of readers, the more specifically and meaningfully you'll be able to speak. John Updike said, "I write to the person a little to the left and below the center of Kansas." One strategy is to envision the persona, as I mentioned, your characterization of the ideal reader. So, right now, draw a circle on the page. Inside that circle, draw a stick figure. That's your audience. Your challenge is to know the challenges, the ways that that person thinks and feels and experiences, primarily what the challenges are that you're going to address with your book. Same process with a client, by the way. What? You got to respect the marketplace, be attuned to needs, provide answers, make your approaches to answers accessible, and be attuned to what someone else wants and needs. In other words, how you get in the circle by knowing those people specifically and how you address them, what their challenges are, what their needs are. And beyond that, be true to your story. Writing is not a special language. It's not a gift you're born with. Writing is thinking on paper. Anyone who thinks clearly should be able to write clearly. So here's a what exercise to think before you write. Sit down and think about your idea before you begin to write about it. How are you going to move from that idea to a rich three-dimensional book? Think about what you'll write along these lines. What are you trying to communicate? What form should your book take? What chapters should it be divided into? We're going to talk more about each of these in next seminar about the specific craft. What should go into each chapter? What are you going to draw from experiences to enhance the book? And what other stories are you going to tell in the book that illustrate or amplify your points? What kind of research are you going to do to deepen the quality? I want to return to that, too. You're not in the business of finding readers for your words. You're in the business of finding words for your readers. This is the process that writers don't usually report and you don't usually see, the thinking part, the preparation. Writers in an interview say their book just comes out or it comes to them. It doesn't happen in that way. writing is creative pleasure, but it's work. The only thing harder than writing is rewriting. The where. Decide where you want to write. Virginia Woolf emphasized the importance of having a room of one's own. Get your space ready. Protect it from intrusions and noise, from texts and emails, too. Put one or two things in there that will represent your commitment to writing. During the time you commit to write, protect that space and time from intrusions. Unplug your telephone, your answering service, your voicemail will take care of it. There are a few true emergencies in life. Talking to your buddy about who got kicked off American Idol last night isn't one of them, at least not during your writing time. Guard your writing time to allow full immersion. Protect your time. For every yes, you'll have to pay with at least one no, so be careful about your time. Protect your time and take care of yourself. The when. Make an appointment with yourself. Choose a schedule for writing that you'll be loyal to no matter what. It won't just happen that you'll find time to write. Everyone on earth has one thing in common. Our choices in life define us. Those who provide services to others, such as authors, money managers, therapists, leaders, teachers, coaches, especially parents, have their answers counted many times. What will yours be? Make it matter. Determine when you'll write. Here's an example. When I had a full psychoanalytic practice and saw a dozen people each day plus teaching, people would ask me when I found time to write. My answer was to say as gently as possible, I never found time to write. I created time. I grew up on a farm and a ranch, so I got up before the sun to feed cattle. Rising early is still natural for me. During all of my years of parenting, I still got up early on a Saturday and Sunday morning and had 2 or 3 hours to write before my two children woke up. But by that time, when they woke up, I was fully ready to turn off my, at the time, dictaphone and roll on the floor, play with them for the rest of the day. And later, during adolescence, I would be totally available in order to be rendered absolutely insignificant by them, which is part of their job description. Decide what time of the day you write best. Know your biorhythms. Think about when you're most creative. Consider what may be a natural time to write and when you have the most inclination to do things like editing. Writing and editing are two different states of mind, two different parts of the brain, and are best not combined. Decide when to do each. Here's my best piece of advice to you. Start writing. Start simple, start slow, start now. Perhaps the most literate answer to the when question was offered over 900 years ago by Rashi, the great Torah commentator, who said, whatever you can do or dream you can do, begin it. How? Recognize your natural style of writing. Are you visual, auditory, kinesthetic? Respect that style as you write. Some of you do best, perhaps virtually, at a keyboard, seeing the words appear on the screen. If you're primarily an auditory person, use a dictation device. I've written all of my first drafts by dictating, and that way, as I said, I envision a person or audience. Now, if you do better writing longhand, get a lot of yellow pads. Get ones with really thick backs, because I think somehow that makes writers perform better. Consider also your work and performance style. Those elements aren't usually talked about very much, but I consider them useful in writing as well as in coaching. You can find a white paper on that subject on my website under articles. It's called Toward Brain Hardware Optimization in the articles section on mentorpath.com. One suggestion. Whenever you have an idea, even if it doesn't come during your specified writing time, write it down. Capture it. Get it in a typed form some way. Research on memory tells us that a new idea or fact lasts an average of 40 seconds in short-term memory unless you write it down to review. After that, it's gone. You probably had the experience of thinking of a great phrase or a really catchy way to say something and think, well, I'm going to remember that later, and later comes and you don't. One principle we know from coaching, when people are asked what they intend to do they're most likely to act according to how they answer. When you ask people the day before an election if they intend to vote, it increases the probability of they're going to vote by 25%. In a study of 40,000 subjects, the question was, do you intend to buy a new car? Being asked that question increased purchase rates in the next 4 months by 35%. Another factor that increases the likelihood of desirable behavior is asking people whether they intend to eat certain foods or to diet or to exercise. One of the basic steps in coaching, as you know, is to make sure each session includes framing an action plan for the next week that a client commits to do. So, your commitment to yourself. Write down your who, what, where, when, and how. Specifically address your intention and plan and commitment. Make an appointment with yourself to keep it with the same loyalty that you do an appointment with your doctor, your dentist, your accountant. Writing doesn't come about through inspiration. It happens when you decide to sit down and write. So create a structure for that. Weekly, daily. Clarissa Pinkola Estes said, to be ourselves causes us to be exiled by many others, and yet to comply with what others want causes us to be exiled from ourselves. A word on creativity. There is a natural, innate energy inside each of us to create. When we open ourselves to that creativity, we allow our internal experience to flow through whatever channels are natural, words, pictures, movement. Creativity is a natural part of life. So as you begin the process of your book, don't compare your inside with somebody else's outside. Somebody else's outside may be a complete book, and when you pick it up to read it, it's going to seem daunting. That author did not begin with that complete book. He or she began with an idea and then crafted a few lines and then reworked it again and again. A great deal of thinking and a great deal of reading are required to write a book. Writers, in discussing their books after they're published, omit or minimize the amount of work that went into completion of the books. We call that a nostalgia bias. Nostalgia is remembering something not as it was, but as better than it was. Airbrushed memories set on an idealized stage. When we compare our inside, our hoped for a book, with their outside, the completed published book, hands down, no comparison. We don't take into account the true scope of the work. And again, nobody ever sits down to write a book. You sit down to write a few sentences. You sit down for an hour at your desk and you stay there. At the time, you've decided to commit to writing just in case some random string of words occurs to you or some expression that you create or need to capture. Some writers set a word quota for a segment. 250 words is a full double-spaced page. So, one of the things I want to close with, 10 caveats for writers. The most important thing about a plan is having one. The second most important thing about a plan is sticking to it. 2, write every day. It will help you think like a writer. 3, read every day. It will help you think like a writer communicating to a reader. 4, write in a voice that sounds like you. Writing is not a contest. Writing is a transaction, a relationship between two people, you and the reader. So sound like yourself and be yourself. If you don't say indeed, don't write it. If you don't say one would think, don't write it. Talk to your reader. 5, use language simply and warmly. You'll be able to make any subject clear by reducing it to good English. A clear, simple sentence is no accident. 6, write, let me say that differently, how you write will be how you're perceived. Your writing may be your only way to introduce yourself to someone whose business, trust, affection, or money is what you want. This is a sidebar that's a total rabbit hole, but I met my wife, we've been married 14 years. I met her 16 years ago at a writer's conference, And I sent her a copy of the book I mentioned, Making Memories. And she said, reading that book, she fell in love with me. So sometimes it works. 7, keep the burden of clarity. Writing is about creating meaning. Rewriting is about crafting meaning to make it optimally useful and accessible to a reader. Plan from the beginning to keep the burden of clarity of communication yourself. Don't shift it to the reader or listener, because this way you maintain the ownership of responsibility to your reader to make it clear, brief, and simple. 8, have the end in mind in the beginning. In the film The Lookout, Lewis, a blind man, helps his mentally challenged roommate make sense of things by thinking of his day as a story. Lewis said, start at the end. Can't tell a story if you don't know where it's going. 9, take some positive action toward your goal every day, even if it's just one action. At the end of the month, you'll have 30 completed actions. If you just write 2 paragraphs a day, you'll have 60 paragraphs at the end of a month. And that's a bunch. That's a West Texas literary term, by the way. 10, decide what you want. Believe it's possible. A belief is a filter between reality and our perception. A belief is the mind's command to the brain, the software program that determines our behavior. We now know that beliefs can actually turn genes on or turn them off. Highlight this equation in your outline. Beliefs drive behavior. Behavior drives performance. You can change, that'll be useful in coaching too, by the way, which you probably already do daily. You can change your life by changing your beliefs. Our possibilities are only limited to the ones we allow ourselves to see. So, here's a final story. A destitute young housewife had almost no money. She had a book idea that came to her when she was on a train, but she didn't have a pen, and she was too shy to ask for a pen, so she forgot some of the initial parts of the story that occurred to her. She couldn't afford a babysitter or a computer, but she had a story to tell, and she was determined to do it, and she decided to write. As soon as she started writing, her mother died at age 45 from multiple sclerosis. Her marriage to an abusive husband ended in a divorce. She had already had a miscarriage because of that. After that, she got fired from her job and lived on government welfare. She took her baby to a coffee shop in the middle of the afternoon and wrote on a legal pad while her baby napped. She did that every day, 7 days a week, for 4 years. And then, after much work, she finally found a publisher for Harry Potter. And her last book sold 11 million copies in the first hour. So, this is an exercise I want you to do before next time. This is not, I don't think, in the workbook or in the outline. So, jot this down. This is, if you do anything, do this one, okay? In the next 24 hours, maybe even before you go to bed, while it's still, you know, you're still in the flow here, because you know how shipboard romances work. In the morning, you'll think, yeah, that was a good. Do this exercise. Sketch 2 things. Even if you're not a drawer, sketch 2 things. 1, the cover of your book. The title, subtitle, and your name on it. Draw a rectangle, put the title, the subtitle, and your name on it. And the second thing, draw a sketch of that book on a shelf at your local independent bookseller or on the table at the back of the room where you present. Put it somewhere real in space, on a bookshelf, at a bookstore, or on a table at the back of the room. Okay, if you'll manage the background noise, we're in discussion mode.
Oh, great.
So questions, thoughts, comments, or clarifications about anything we've
talked
about? I need you to manage background noise. We're on open mic right now. Thoughts, questions?
Hi, Dr. Kruger. My name's Pat.
I will talk to you if you call me Dave.
Okay, Dave.
All right, then.
Thank you so much for this information. I'm very excited, and I have the hope that I'm finally going to finish this book because I have three books in process, and I lacked the information of really how to do it. I've had the commitment to do it, so thank you. I'm just very excited about this whole thing.
Okay, may I coach you for a moment?
Yes, please.
You've probably had – are you a coach?
Yes, I just finished the coach's training.
Okay.
With
right.
Lori.
All right. You probably heard a lot of coach-to-coach sessions that began with, well, I just need to get motivated to lose weight. I need to get motivated to eat better. I need to get motivated to work out. First, you do not need motivation. I'm here to tell you. I've worked with pro athletes and actors. They're not motivated to get up and go to the gym every day, athletes in all season. But they do it because they know they have to do that in order to do not what's next. So you only need two things. Motivation is not one of them. You need a plan, and you need to stick to it. That's all you need. That will complete your book successfully when you have a plan and a structure and you stick to it.
And I'll do it. I just had lost hope so many times because I was missing the how-to. Now I have it.
No, you were missing the set down two. The set down two. You got
yes.
Hope. That's great. That's a positive expectation, and that let me coach all of you for a moment, okay? And this is something I suspect may be. Not universal, but it's something you've experienced, something you've heard with every client. We have basically two motivations as human beings, and this is hardwired into our brain and incorporated into our mind software, and it's to avoid pain and to seek pleasure. So the surface story, which is conscious, and only about 5-10% of our operating system is conscious. The rest is unconscious, neuroscientists tell us, so we only see results of it. So the surface story would say, I want to write a book. I want to create a successful book and a contribution, and it's going to be helpful to a number of people in my practice. Now, that makes sense. That's conscious, logical, and intellectual. The shadow story may go in the other direction to say, well, I'm not sure I have something to say, or what if I get it out there? What if I put in all this work and it's not successful, or I realize that people, you know, the shadow story, whatever conversation is activated, consciously or not, that goes in the opposite direction of that, and it can create a stuckness. So that's mm-hmm. the story that is about avoiding pain. So look at it from a coaching perspective. What's the greater pain if you don't proceed? What's the greater pleasure if you do proceed? So if you decide to pursue the greater pleasure and proceed, create a structure for it. Create a structure each week, each day that you have time set aside to do it. We'll talk more about that next time. But have a plan, stick to it. Make that plan very specific. And remember, SMART goals have a T on the end, time bound. Time is here what time you're going to work the days that you work each week. It won't just happen. Same with working out, by the way, but that's another story. We've got one. Did that help at all?
Yes, Dave. It helped me tremendously.
Okay. You've improved in two ways, which I just heard. You call me my right name, and if what I said had some impact, that's great. We've got 1 minute. Any other comment or question briefly?
Dave, this is Kip.
Hey, Kip, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing just great, thanks.
Good.
Formerly, I was under the impression that I had to find out what people wanted to hear and what motivated them. And now what I'm hearing is that being authentic to ourselves and saying our truth and with the audience that we want to reach in our minds is far more important than trying to figure out what somebody wants and then give it to them.
That's a great battlefield conversion right there. I think you're on the right track. That can be equally exciting and creative, being centered in what you want to do, what you want to learn about, but then knowing you're going to make a contribution to others because you know who those others are, or at least you have some prototypes of them that you create. So thank you all very much. Send me answers to those two questions about what you most want to focus on and what you'd most like to take away. And look at how close those are from or with the questions that you ask every client at the beginning of every session. What do you want to focus on? What do you want to take away? So guess where I got that. So thanks very, very much, and I look forward to hearing from you if you have responses to that, and it'll help shape some of what I say. So we'll pick up here next time. Thanks so much. Bye now.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Absolutely.